Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Can I just interject to clear the palate with a little anecdote about Steve Howie?
Yeah. Can you tell this on the show, or is this not a?
Well, you might have to just bleep out one bit. Basically, just one word at the end. But every time I hear Steve Howie's name, it always reminds me of back when he played for Newcastle. His brother, Lee Howie, played for Sunderland. And I've got a few mates who are Sunderland fans. And there was a song they had for Lee Howie. And it wasn't even about him, really. It was just, Lee Howie, Lee Howie, Lee Howie, your brother is a...
This is Blue Moon. It's the original fan-made Manchester City podcast. Coming up, we've got news and views from City's Week. It's your club, and this is your show.
The international break is over, and it's a return to action for Manchester City this weekend, and a chance to get back-to-back defeats against Wolves and Arsenal out of the system. We've all been stewing on those results for a fortnight, so hopefully Guardiola and the players have too, and they'll be ready to get back in the saddle against Brighton on Saturday. Welcome to this week's Blue Moon podcast, where we'll be previewing City's two important matches this week. We'll hear from Brighton fan Ryan Adset about what we can expect to see from the Seagulls, plus we'll have insight into young boys from the Switzerland co-head researcher for football. Or manager Oliver Zessiger. Later in the show, we'll also catch up with the former City defender Steve Howie to get his memories of his time at Main Road, so stay tuned for that. But before all of that, let's talk Brighton and young boys. I'm David Mooney. With me this week, I've got two City fans, Chris Higginbottom.
Hello.
And KC.
All right.
How do? KC, you well?
Yeah, happy days are here again, me and Higgy. Shite.
Yeah, I don't like doing preview shows because I never have a lot to say about games to preview, so I thought I'd get two massive knobheads on to sort it all out.
Were they not able to do it? Or
with an extra knobhead in yourself, yeah.
Yeah. Now, for the 2023-24 season, the Blue Moon podcast is sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. It's a massive fortnight of sport with the Premier League, rugby and cricket all taking centre stage. To celebrate, Green King is giving Blue Moon podcast listeners 20% off drinks until the 29th of October, an hour before, during and after the sport. That includes City's games with Young Boys and the upcoming Manchester Derby at Old Trafford. All you need to do is download the Green King Sport app. If you've not downloaded it before, you'll even get a free welcome pint as well. So head over to the App Store, download the Green King Sports app, get 20% off your round, and don't miss a minute of the action. Let's start then this week with Brighton and kind of getting back in the saddle, Chris, because I've done a bit of kind of scanning down the results. It's been 7 years since City lost three in a row in the Premier League. It was Pellegrini's final season. Brighton's not the ideal game to avoid that happening again, is it? It's going to be a tough one, this.
Yeah, it's a bit of a... Well, I suppose the token phrase is potential banana skin, isn't it?
Is it a potential banana skin or is it just a banana skin?
Well, it's not an actual banana skin, so...
It's not a literal banana skin, yeah.
It's potential virtual banana skin.
Did you
skin.
Know that banana skins are technically a herb?
I was aware of that, yeah. Have you ever fallen on an actual banana skin?
No, they're not very slippy, are they?
Well, it depends, actually. I have actually slipped on one.
No, I refuse to believe that this has ever happened.
Mooney, you're a Jonathan Creek fan, and he proved that in one of the episodes that you can slip on banana skin.
Of all the people that I know in life, I knew you'd know that. But yeah, you're right. He did. I remember an episode where he was on the top of a hill somewhere. He was kept throwing banana skins on the floor, trying to slide on them. They're not slippy at all. Sorry, Chris.
Well, if you're on a hill, I mean,
oh, bananas are not slippy on a hill, are they?
Well, they'd be more slippy on, for instance, a pavement,
where
you get the aquaplaning effect, rather than them just adhering to the granular surface of, say, a muddy grassland that you'd expect on top of a hill. Typical topography.
I agree with you, Higgy. I think they can be slippy.
Potentially.
Yeah.
Potentially.
So let me just clear this up, Higgy. Do you live in a cartoon? Is that where you live?
No, not anymore. No, I...
Who framed Chris Higginbottom?
I had to draw it to a close.
Hey.
I know you hate puns. Sorry.
I don't hate puns. I'm not a massive fan of puns. A good pun delivered well is fine, but yeah.
Thank you.
Well, apologies. All right, okay.
Getting back to the actual football, which is, I hope, what people are tuned into.
Football run.
Yeah. KC, the three defeats in a row thing, it's only ever happened twice in the Premier League.
I haven't answered my question.
All right, fine, you answer then. Go on.
I mean, granted, I did meander somewhat from your initial asking of it. What was it again?
I feel Brighton. I feel like I might have lost control of this podcast already.
It's never a good time to play them because they are, well, at the moment they're pretty inconsistent, but we know they have real quality and we are probably asking questions of ourselves over our dip in form. If nothing else, it gives us the opportunity to sing, adapt the three in a row song that we've got. So City lose three in a row. Looking forward to that.
It's only ever happened twice in the Premier League, KC, since the takeover. Hughes' first season and Pellegrini's final season.
As we all know, football started then.
Yeah, exactly. No reason to look before that. Certainly not when you're just trolling through fixtures looking for records like I was the other night.
That's when I started supporting them anyway.
Yeah. ultimately, it's the loss of form, as Higgy says, coincides quite nicely with the loss of Rodri. Is it as simple as that?
Potentially, yes, because Rodri, for my mind, was up there as Ballon d'Or contender with how he's been playing, the past, 6 or 7 months or whatever. Probably longer, actually. I might be doing him a disservice.
He'd never get it. He would never, ever get it.
I know that because, as we all know, there's an agenda. But at the same time, I don't think that we played particularly poorly. I think the games weren't too dissimilar to previous games where we have had Rodri and we've just come through it. Like, I think we didn't play particularly well against Arsenal, but I would argue on balance that we were the better team. But sometimes those games just come down to luck, don't they?
It was really similar to the Cup game last year, wasn't it? Which was very finely balanced and was down to a freak Nathan Ake goal as well. One in our favour with his right foot and one in their favour
with his face.
The right side of his face. Yeah.
KC, where do you feel City are at this season then, given all of that? Because, as you say, it's been much of a muchness in terms of performances, maybe. But obviously, you can't knock the fact that they'd won, what was it, 5 in a row to start the season, and they were absolutely flying results-wise, if maybe not performance-wise.
Yeah, I think with the way that the season started, for numerous different... So the way that we've started quicker than we normally do, I think the past two results have put a bit of a downer on things when they necessarily shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
I think we've started seasons slowly before and it's not been a problem. However, I think the fact that other teams have started really well has sort of compounded that feeling of the past two games not going our way. I think people have been slightly more down than they would have normally been. But having said that, I don't think people are, morbid and going, oh, it's all going wrong or anything like that. I think people are just worried about, like you say, there being a knock-on effect and there might be 3 or 4 games of a slump, which isn't particularly like us. I think if we get back to winning ways on Saturday, I think we'll be right back at it.
Yeah. The other side of this, Chris, as well, is that, like, we talk about Brighton being a tough team to play. Sometimes you want that in these situations. Sometimes you want a game that you can't take for granted because it actually gives you a kick up the backside to go out and play well.
Yeah, I agree. And they're kind of like the ideal sort of stature of side to play as well. I mean, you wouldn't necessarily want, say, Liverpool, but Brighton, although very dangerous, they're very beatable.
Especially at home.
Yeah. And with Rodri back. I mean, I'm expecting us to win. I'm not expecting it to be a cakewalk by any means, but I do think we'll do it.
Yeah,
and I think the games that we've lost. I mean, I love the Carabao. It was a real shame. The Arsenal game, as I sort of said earlier, I think it was very much in the balance. Not too disheartened with that, and the other side of that coin, Arsenal are so like overly buoyed by it. They really are a bit giddy, aren't they? I mean, they win the league earlier and earlier every season, it seems. It's ridiculous. And it's really, if there is a good time to lose that game, then this time of the season.
When there's 90-odd points still to play for.
Exactly, yeah. And it's like, we've still got to play at our place, lads. Just calm down.
Yeah.
I'm not overly concerned. It's a good time to, as good a time as any to lose, and it's a great time to bounce back against a team like Brighton.
I think the Arsenal game would have been a bit different if they'd completely outplayed us or something like that. But when you consider, like, you know, like you mentioned, we didn't have Rodri, and then you factor that we've not had De Bruyne for months.
Stones.
And we were still, arguably the better team, even with us underperforming. It shouldn't be too disheartening.
You can't get too worried about it, can you?
No. Yeah. There were some big chances in that game as well from Haaland and Aki that 9 times out of 10 you'd expect them to score. Maybe not Aki, but given the distance, you'd hope so.
Yeah.
It's about 3 yards out when he spooned that shot.
Just
not disheartened at all.
The other thing, Chris, I just before we hear from Ryan Adsett on the Brighton side of things, you said you don't expect it to be a cakewalk, and I'm trying to work out, like, surely walking on cake would be slippier than walking on bananas.
Well, you can actually fill a swimming pool full of custard and walk across that.
I saw that episode of Brainiac as well.
Yeah, John Sickle walked across it, didn't he?
Yeah.
There you go. So, I mean, walking across cake would be relatively easier, hence the phrase, I would suggest.
Would it? I just think it'd be slippier than...
Depends on the cake. Is it iced?
Well, custard's a non-Newtonian liquid, isn't it? So that's why you're able to do it, but I don't think cake is.
But is the cake iced? What sort of cake are we talking? Is it a dense cake? Is it a light sponge?
I just think any cake's slippier than a banana.
Any cake?
Any cake is slippier than a banana, surely.
This is ridiculous. I'm not having that. Right. We need a pavement and a hillside, some bananas and a variety of cakes.
I would say the slippiest cake would be a urinal cake.
Also one of the worst tasting, I find.
Yeah, not a fan myself. Let's drag this podcast kicking and screaming back to the actual topics and hear from the Brighton camp. I've been speaking to podcaster and writer Ryan Adsett to find out how he's feeling ahead of this weekend's game.
I think every time I've come on here, it's probably been the best time to be a Brighton fan, which probably says quite a lot. But equally, I'd actually argue and say we've not started the season but perhaps as well as we think. Probably a bit like City fans. It's been a bit of a strange start. Obviously, De Zerbi, Lewis Dunk come out and saying that we are in a strange spot, but we're picking up results, which I guess shows that we are a good side and, you know, we are here to stay. But at the same time, we're conceding a lot of goals. And obviously, when you're coming up against Manchester City at the Etihad, conceding a lot of goals is really not something that you want, you know, in the back of your mind.
Yeah, what's the problem been in the last few games? Because I must admit, I didn't see a lot of your game against Villa, but I heard a big chunk of it on the radio, and it just that to me seemed like the anomaly of Brighton performances. But I'm sensing that you're a bit vulnerable at the moment.
Yeah, this is the thing. Last season I would have said it's the anomaly, and I still think it is. I'd like to hope we're not going to go lose six again, but you know, it is Manchester City. You never know. But yeah, it was a weird game. I was there, and I just sort of had the feeling from the first goal that this could get a bit ugly because, you know, we've been beaten on the transition a lot this season. So nearly every time there's a counter-attack since losing Caicedo, McAllister, you know, as much as it's great that we're this team that rebuilds and everything like that, and I'm not trying to be negative by any stretch, but it was definitely one where it was a bit of a wake-up call, especially when then we went to Marseille. And a similar thing happened. And actually, I spoke to De Zerbi the gate after the Marseille game. And I said to him, you know, we concede goals really, really quickly at the moment. You know, is this a mentality thing? Because at first I was questioning mentality, but then we came back and drew 2-2, so it couldn't have been. And he said, to be honest with you, it's been one of those where, you know, we get hit and then we don't really know what's happened, which isn't a good trait to have. Obviously, the same thing happened again at Liverpool in the same week. You know, we were cruising and a game we were controlling just before the international break, 1-0 up. And we were dominating Liverpool, really, on the large stretch. And then we went into the half-time whistle at 2-1 down. And I just thought, how did that just happen? Don't get wrong, we came back again, and that's a good thing. But yeah, there's definitely a sense of we concede once and we could concede again pretty quickly afterwards. And I don't quite know why.
Yeah, the Liverpool game. I thought, I don't know if you got the same sense from this, but it kind of gave me a sense that the old Brighton was still there. There was a chance for fight backs in games like that. And like you say, I watching that game, I thought like you gave a real good account of yourselves in that game. I thought.
Oh, I agree, and I think Liverpool are probably the form team at the moment, aren't they? When we're coming up against them, it was, thinking on the back of that Villa, on the back of Marseille, thinking, God, the last thing you want is probably Liverpool at the moment. But yeah, we did a good job there, actually. I think we were probably the better team on the large face of it. And if, João Pedro scored that in the last few minutes, that's a win. And another day that does go in. But yeah, I thought we played well. But I suppose... De Zerbi's almost changed my brain. I go into games and I want us to be almost perfect like he does. Whereas, before I'll just be happy if we, didn't lose 3-0 away to City. Whereas now it's like, I want us to go there and do well. I'm not saying we're going to beat them by any stretch, but, you expect Brighton these days to be a good side. So I think that's just what De Zerbi's done to our heads, perhaps.
Yeah, it's happened with City fans and Pep as well. So it happens with good coaches when they come in and start changing the way you play.
Yeah, yeah.
How have the squad coped this season with taking on the Europa League as well? Because there is a lot to be said about the sudden kind of impact of having an extra game thrown into the schedule early on in the season as well.
Oh yeah, it's definitely a shocker. I think it's definitely one that, because we've got a largely inexperienced squad. That there's not many in that squad that's played that many games. Lallana and Welbeck, when they're at bigger clubs, but they're not fit enough to play three games anyway. And then you've got sort of Ansu Fati's played obviously at Barcelona, been out for a long time. So really, we've got pretty inexperienced squad in this sense. But I think Athens was a it was almost potentially a blessing in disguise if we go and beat Ajax, which is a big, big if. But it was a bit of a blessing in disguise because I feel like when we get hit nice and early, like, De Zerbi seems to, it's like a bounce back ability, isn't it? We get hit and then we think, okay, that's what we can't do. And I think the Athens one was a bit like that because perhaps we underestimated really how tough the Europa League is for a start, and also how good some sides are that, perhaps you haven't really heard of. I knew Athens, but I never really took into account their squad as much as I probably should have done. And then, they're very physical. It's a different game. So that definitely was a shock, but I think Marseille proved that we can still do it. And, it's given me a bit more confidence going into Ajax, hopefully in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah. Now, obviously, coming to the Etihad this weekend, you've said already you're expecting a tough game. If you are going to get some points from this game, who are the players that are going to do it for you?
Good question. Good question. I mean, we've got a lot of game changers, haven't we? I mean, they always get touted for transfer on Twitter if you don't know their names by now. But I think, the likes of Ferguson, Jim Thomas, all them sort of players. But I have a feeling about Pascal Gross. I love Pascal. I think he's Mr. Underrated and has been for a long time. And it'd be lovely to see him get a goal after he's just come into the Germany side, sort of very, very late bloom. I think he's like 32 now. He's only just been called up for a Germany. Now I think their manager's now saying how it's a bit of a mistake, how it's taken so long and all this sort of thing. Because he's done very well over there. So I think it'd be quite fitting for him to come back home and score a goal at City. It'd be great, but I don't know. It's going to be tough. Obviously, you're in a strange spot as well. And I think that alone gives me that sense of you're going to be right up for it to get a result too.
Yeah. Do you think, because I think this from a City point of view, that City were desperate for the international break. Did you feel like Brighton were as well?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. I think we're probably two of the best footballing teams, right? We like to play football, which is nice. And I think that because of that, when things aren't going, particularly Brighton's way, I don't know if this is the same at City, but it seems like a bit of, not implosion, but the confidence definitely goes down a little bit. And I think that if the confidence is down a little bit, those passes that, you can risk don't quite work. The fluidity is a little bit off. And I think as soon as that happens, teams can just pressure you and win the ball back a bit easier. I think that's definitely what we've seen. Perhaps, I don't know if that's the same at City, but it's definitely been the case at Brighton recently.
Yeah, for City, I think the big one is having Rodri back this weekend just to stabilise everything. Yeah, he's back, I'm afraid.
Excellent.
Just in terms of the goal scorers then for Brighton, you've mentioned Ferguson. I want to talk a little bit about João Pedro because he seems to have come in and done pretty well for himself.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I like Pedro a lot. I think he's a great talent, a really good talent. I want to see a bit more of him in front of goal, because I think he can easily get a couple more goals to his name already. He's got a few. He's only got one from open play. So he's missed a penalty at the moment, but he's very good from the spot, which is great because we don't have a penalty taker. And after losing McAllister, that was definitely the worry, thinking, God, who takes penalties now? But yeah, thank God we got João Pedro for that. But yeah, I think his overall game's getting better. I think he's definitely getting better at linking up and sort of dropping deeper. I like him deeper. I think he's a much better behind the striker, number 10, if you would. That to me is his best position because he can link up play. And I think he's much better at that, you know, turning, beating players than he is if you were to just rely on him with the number 9 shirt on the back. Because I just think if he's in front of goal, I probably wouldn't fancy him as much as I say I would with Ferguson, for example. And I think, yeah, that's just one of those things with João Pedro. I think he's, people look at him thinking he's number 9 because he's got a number 9 on the back. But if he had a number 10, I think it'd be a little bit more appropriate.
Yeah. What do you make of Ferguson as well? Because it's still only 18, but just looks like a seasoned pro at this stage.
Yeah, he's class, isn't he? I mean, again, he needs time, I think. This is what I've said on a couple of these big podcasts, actually. I think I went on a United one, and I said they wanted to sign Ferguson. And I said, well, he's 18 years old. You know, it doesn't... The common misconception of Brighton is you can just sign a player that from Brighton and he's going to be fantastic because he's 18. I mean, he's still very, very good. Don't get me wrong. He's the best finisher I've seen at this club, apart from Glenn Murray, probably. And I love Glenn Murray, but don't get me wrong. But Ferguson's that and a lot more. He's very complete. But at the same time, he's still very young. There's a lot of immaturity. He's been a bit off form recently because he had an illness, I think. And he's taken a bit of time to recover from that. And I just think it needs to be, you know, the almost thing needs to be Brighton need to hold on to their assets for a couple more years and let them improve. Because, you know, I probably would have said this about Caicedo less than McAllister. I think he was ready to move on. But they just need that more time, I think. He's good. He's a great talent. I love him. I think he's fantastic potential. But I think it's just... time is needed with these players. It's not as simple as, yeah, he's going to score a hat-trick this weekend and then, you know, everything's going to be great. It could be he might get a goal this weekend, but he might not start again the following. And I think that's what people need to remember.
Yeah, the other part of what makes Brighton tick as well, you've already mentioned Pascal Gross. You look at players like Mitoma and March as well in the midfield. I spend pretty much probably about 2 or 3 hours every weekend trying to decide which Brighton player I'm going to put into my fantasy league team. And you can guarantee it's going to be the one that doesn't score the points that weekend.
Yeah.
The midfield is just so good at controlling games, I guess. Is that part of what's made you who you are over the last few years?
Yeah, I think last season especially, you know, that as I say, McAllister, like I said, the pivot was so recognised. Pascal's obviously been so good for us. I think Pascal Gross got some crazy stat. He's the second highest chance creator in the Premier League since 2017 when he joined, only behind Kevin De Bruyne, which is incredible stats. I think Bruno Fernandes is close behind him and Mohamed Salah, but I think he's got the most. And if you consider how bad that Brighton side was in the first couple of years, it's incredible, really. But yeah, I think Pascal really deserves a lot more plaudits. But the one that really excites me is Carlos Baleba. I thought he's really looking good. And I was worried at first, you know, say that transition thing. You know, Gilmore's great, but he gets overrun because he's not the most physical. We don't have much physicality in Pascal Gross or, you know, Jack Kintzord, which we saw against Villa. But Baleba adds that a little bit, then 50-50s are ours again. And I think that's what we definitely need. A bit of pace, bit of power in that midfield. And that's what we've definitely lacked since Caicedo left. And Baleba seems not like Caicedo, but probably a little bit more like a, if I was to talk in a City sense, dare I say, Yaya Toure. God, that's a little bit strong.
Yeah, but I know exactly what you mean when you say that, so it's okay.
Yeah.
There's a lot of City fans who seem to have eyes on De Zerbi as the potential Guardiola replacement. Yeah. Now, I'm not suggesting that will happen soon, if at all. Yeah. How do you think he'll approach this game this weekend? Because he seems to have a different plan for different opposition.
Yeah, I think it's a good question, to be honest, because I normally could come on and say I know what's going to happen, whereas because of sort of how we've been recently, I don't know. I think it really depends on how we turn up as opposed to the manager, because I think that maybe the one criticism you can have of the Zerbi, not that there really is any, is the extreme amount of a rotation that we've had. You know, we rotate goalkeepers, we rotate centre backs, midfielders on a weekly basis, if not even on a 3-day basis. And that alone sort of makes you a bit worried, especially, you know, play City. I think, is it Ajax the week next week? I can't remember if it's next week or the week after.
Ajax the Thursday after this game.
Thursday after, yeah. So that's a big game for us, because obviously if we lose that, we're practically, you know, we're looking down the barrel then in the Europa League. So we want to win that game. So, you know, it makes you wonder whether we'll look at, you know, City as a bit of a punt perhaps and try and play. But I don't think that'll happen, because the Zerbi's a winner and he'll want to just try and win the game. But yeah, I think the way we've been, as long as we just don't have that little mini implosion, I think we'll be fine. I just really hope that doesn't happen, because City are way, way, way more than capable of making an implosion happen into a bit of a massacre. And as we've seen so many times in the past, we really, really could do without that, especially before going to Ajax, because last time we went into a Europa League game, we'd just been beaten 6-1 by Villa. So let's hope that doesn't happen again.
Yeah. Well, Ryan, let's have a score prediction for this game. We've got the charity bet coming up a bit later on. I'm notoriously bad at it, so I like to give my prediction over to guests. So what will you say for this one? Yeah.
I hate predictions as well, to be fair, especially when I'm playing against Manchester City away. But I will be there in the away end, and I'm very excited to be back at the Etihad, because I actually quite enjoyed last season, even though we lost. Let's say, oh God, can I predict a win? Is that really delusional? I'm going to do it anyway, just for the sake of the viewers. I'm gonna say a 2-1 win. God, that's awful, considering we've conceded about 3 goals a game. Let's say 2-2 draw. A 2-2 draw.
2-2 draw.
That's me being hopeful, yeah, because we'll concede definitely, and hopefully we can just try and outscore you. And if it ends in a 2-2, then that'd be a great day out in Manchester.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
That was Ryan Adsett looking at the game between City and Brighton this weekend. KC, Brighton might not be in the best form at the moment as well, as Ryan says there. So maybe it is actually a good time to face them, because they as much as they will come and have a go, if they're not feeling themselves at the moment, it could be a good time to kind of exploit the spaces that they'll leave.
I'm not really sure. When it's a team, I think the main factor that I'm confident about the weekend is the fact that it's at home. Whether they're in form or they're out of form, I find Brighton a very strange side. Like, they look like absolute world beaters towards the back end of last season, and then got absolutely battered at home by Everton.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere.
Who dropped points to Everton last season?
I know. Oh, God, yeah. I think they're just a strange team. And I think they could turn up and look like, you know, 1970 Brazil, or they could turn up, you know, and just get absolutely walloped and turn up, you know, and it could go like the Fulham game. How long ago was that? About 6 weeks ago at home, yeah. where we just suddenly turn it on. It's hard to judge with them.
They got thrashed at home by West Ham as well.
Yeah, that was it. Was it 3-1?
Yeah, well, 3-1. Yeah. Got a goal in the 80th.
Yeah. So yeah, they are a bit of a strange side. Like Higgy said, they are very dangerous, but at the same time, the right sort of profile of a team that you'd want in terms of balance of, they play football, they're a good side, so we should be focused, and then the fact that we're at home. You'd hopefully think, coming off those two results, that everyone will be dialed in for this at the weekend.
Yeah. How dialed in do you think Rodri will be, Chris? Because obviously he'll come straight back in, and it's almost a case of, right, lad, sorry, I fucked up here. I need to make amends for this.
I think he'll be very dialed in, speed dialed in, dialed into the max. I think he'll be, yeah, very, very keen to make amends. Hopefully not over keen, because he does put himself about a bit, but probably a lesson learned. Again, with Rodri, in terms of timing in the season, like and when to lose him, perhaps a boon in terms of what we lose when we've not got him and strategies to work around that. And for him as well to learn that lesson now with so many points to play for, he's lost his head there. It's a lesson learned and will stand us and him in good stead.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be adverse to him just leathering shots from 30 yards though. Like, you know, if he loses his head in that regard, you know, you could see.
He has been doing a bit of that.
Yeah. You could see an absolute wonder goal coming from him if he decides to take his anger out in that way.
It's funny though, KC, because we did this on the podcast a few weeks ago after the Sheffield United game. Of all of his goals, like I think he's got the highest proportion of goals that, you know, from a player that isn't like Haaland or Aguero in City's team that actually matter, if that makes sense. Like goals that change the game.
Heavy goals.
Yeah,
they used to say.
Yeah, they City take the lead or they equalise or like with a Rodri goal. But it's not just like when you say heavy goals, I think of like Edin Dzeko like scuffing it in at the back post. Like, but
I think of Gundogan now.
Yeah,
Rodri's definitely on that. Like, you know, you can't get bigger than the winner to win a treble, really, can you?
No, fair point. Yeah, yeah. Can City just pick up from where they left off with him in the team, KC? Do you think? Because they've tried so many options without him in the team, and it's just a case of right, okay, well, we'll just go back to what it was. Is it just going to be that simple?
I don't think it will be because it being De Zerbi's Brighton, and I think Pep will have come up with about 40 different plans. Bearing in mind he's had a bit of time off to overthink the game, so I'm sure we won't play like we have done purely off that basis. I'm very confident that he'll get, you know, that Pep will find a way, Mooney.
Yeah.
But it's a case of. I don't think that we'll set up in the same way that we have done in previous games, but that's more to do with Pep having time off.
Yeah. Do you feel the same way, Chris? And does that extend to kind of like the front players? Because I think there's a real question to be asked about whether you want someone like Doku for his unpredictability and his ability to kind of be explosive and run at the fullback, or if you want someone like Jack Grealish, you'll keep it tight, keep it tidy, and make sure that City don't lose the ball.
Because of the unpredictability of the two managers locking horns and the fact that Doku has that sort of maverick element to him, I would start with Grealish. With regard to the question about Rodri, I think it will be very much a case of like putting on a familiar garment, and I think the players around him will be relieved to have him back in. And I think even if Pep employs a different style of play as he has done to the last game, or like KC was suggesting, he might have overthought it to the extent of coming up with, you know, X amount of varied kind of strategies. But I think just the fact that you've got him there, you know what it's like when you're in a team and one of your best players comes back in and you're used to playing with that player. It's like, right, even if he's in your peripheral vision, you know how to pass to that player more naturally, how they move, how they interact. And I just think, for me, I disagree saying it's going to be anything other than a huge relief for the way we play and for the other players. Rodri coming straight back in, I think it will be a very calming, beneficial influence.
How about Stones? Would you have him back in? Because I think it's felt like in many games this season, one of the things City have missed is someone who can play the ball from the back four.
Definitely, and for the same reasons as Rodri, really, that I've just said. I'd probably kind of copy and paste that answer to borrow a Steve Howe phrase. But yeah, I think...
Oh, that's from an interview that we haven't heard yet on this show, but you have heard because you've heard it as a pre-record.
Yeah, that was perhaps
you're playing with the time-space continuum here now.
I am, great Scott.
It's just a little teaser trailer from Higgy.
It is, it's a teaser. Some great interview from Steve Howe coming up, folks.
But I also I also don't know if I've left that in the edit that's going to go in the show. So let's find out later on.
Well, I only listened to the short edit, and bloody hell, if that's a short edit, the long one, I didn't have time to. But yeah, Rodri and Stones coming back in can only be a good thing all round. I was a bit... It's one of them, isn't it? You know, the international break, and he started Stones in the last games, and Partey is like, what are you doing, you absolute madman? You can't start him. He's been out for months. And then it's like, but if he doesn't get injured, that's absolutely fantastic for him. Yeah. So yeah, luckily we got away with that. And I would be... I mean, who'd you drop, though? Who would you play at the back? If Stones comes straight back in and we put Stones in midfield, this is why I'm not a manager.
Yeah, Casey, for City, and like with Stones coming back, Rodri's coming back, you know, they've got Bernardo again after an injury, Grealish after an injury. It feels like they're coming through the other side of these selection issues.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, although I forgot to mention it before, that's one of the reasons why I think we may set up ever so slightly different, not massively different, because I think the lineups for the first few games of the season when we were on that good run were born out of necessity more than anything else, yeah, weren't they? Whereas hopefully options now would mean that, you know, Pep can, you know, work his magic and come up with something weird and wonderful that no one else has ever thought of.
Well, that's a weekly occurrence for him, though, isn't it? So that's there must only be a finite number of things you can do tactically on a football pitch. You must be running out of tactics soon enough. I don't know where that thought came from.
Six centre halves at the back over the next one.
Yeah, yeah.
Had to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, sharing bottles of wine with Tony Pulis and just discussing having large men at the back.
Yeah. Right, well, it's another new opponent for City in the Champions League this week as well. So what can we expect from Young Boys as City travel to Switzerland on Wednesday? To find out, I've been speaking to Oliver Zessiger, who is the Switzerland co-head researcher for Football Manager and who reports on Swiss football for the website Transfermarkt. I started by asking how things were going for them at the moment.
Decently well. I mean, qualifying for the Champions League was a success. It was one of their main objectives. In the league, they're currently not at the top, which is a slight surprise. Basically, Zurich is some points ahead of them. And on Sunday evening, they play against each other. So there is a top-of-the-table clash before the City game. But overall, the team gets some criticism for their lack of plan B, and they're a bit... basic playing style, but it's early in the season still, so it's going decently well.
Yeah, how do they usually approach seasons? What's the style in which that they normally play?
So they play in a 4-4-2 diamond formation usually, but their style is more like they have big, tall guys up front, so they try to win second balls. They're not afraid to play a long ball. They're a quick transition team as well. So it's not like a short passing game. Not very eye-catching to watch, but in Switzerland it's successful, and internationally, or at least continentally, it worked decently well as well.
Yeah. How do they usually do? I mean, give us an idea, you know, season on season. Are they usually challenging for titles in the Champions League positions regularly?
They won five. Let me just quickly think about it. I think five out of the last six league titles. So and two cups. So they are the main team in Switzerland. They're the team to beat. You might remember a decade ago, Basel won 8 straight league titles. Now it's Young Boys winning straight league titles and cups. They're the financially most stable team, or let me say the richest team, but due to their qualification for Champions Leagues and Europa Leagues and so on and so forth, they are the team to beat in Switzerland. So that's why it's a slight surprise that they're not sitting at the top of the table at the moment.
Yeah. You mentioned the 4-4-2 diamond earlier on. Do you expect that to change for the City game? Because a lot of teams do kind of modify what they do when they come up against Pep Guardiola.
I do believe they will change because in the first league, in the first Champions League game against Leipzig, they played in a with a back five, and I think that it was a 5-3-2, I believe. I think that they will apply this back five again because it makes them defensively more stable. And I think they're able to counter specific threats a little bit better against City. And yeah, it's just a defensively more stable formation for them.
Yeah. Well, what are they hoping for from the Champions League this season? Because obviously they'd lost to Leipzig, but then drew with Red Star. What will the aim be for the Champions League campaign?
The aim is to play European football again next year, which means become at least third. Which, in my book, it should be possible. I mean, all comes down to the second game against Red Star. If everything goes very well, they could become maybe second, but I don't think so. So their aim is really to finish third in the group and then play Europa League next season.
Yeah. Now, obviously, it's a tough challenge coming up against City. If they are to cause a little bit of a shock, who are the players that are likely to be dangerous? Who are the ones that might do it?
Mainly Meshak Elia. He's a striker / winger who's very quick, very agile, isn't afraid to take a long shot, scored against Leipzig. And he's the main threat. Cedric Eaton, some British football fans may know him from the Scottish Premiership a couple of years ago. He's also Swiss international. And then my personal favourite is Filip Ugrinić in midfield. He's a very strong, very athletic central midfielder who is also not afraid to shoot from far out. Those are the three specific threats up front that you need to take care of.
Yeah. What about weaknesses for young boys? Where have they shown a little bit of weakness this season?
That's a good question. They're not the most efficient team when it comes to converting chances, and they do concede more goals than usual. So it's a bit on both ends. What they probably aren't, they aren't the technically best team. So they're more a physical team. And those are the main weaknesses at the moment. Their goalkeeper can be hit and miss, although he's young. He has conceded some dodgy goals in the last couple of games, notably against Red Star. And it is the team is still looking to find itself and the tactics that the coach has applied.
Yeah. Now, obviously, this game in midweek is in Bern. What's the stadium like there? What can the travelling City fans expect from things like the atmosphere and the event and the occasion?
First off, the stadium is new. It was built, 15 years ago? And it has an artificial pitch. So Pep might not be satisfied with this, but it is the reality of Bern. They don't have an academy. They train, or most of the teams, including youth teams, train in the stadium. So they needed something else other than a grass pitch. And main stand for ultras is usually loud. They usually do a tifo choreography before the game, and it will be a good atmosphere. The game will be sold out, if I'm not mistaken. It would surprise me if it wasn't. And it's just it will be a good atmosphere. It can be slightly chilly because the wind gets into the stadium. And pack your jackets and not your winter clothes, but at least your warmer clothes when you go there.
Yeah, bring a scarf at least. Yeah.
Oliver,
we got a charity bet coming up a bit later on in the show. What would your score prediction be for this game?
I'm not very optimistic, to be honest. I think it's going to be a 3-0 for City.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Oliver Zesiger talking to me about young boys this season. KC, with United on the Sunday this weekend after this game, I know we're getting a bit ahead of ourselves here, but City have got a pretty tough run coming up fixture-wise. Is it worth making fairly big changes from the weekend to keep things fresh and to keep things ticking over, and knowing that City are, they're not done in the Champions League, but they've got a good setting of two wins from two so far?
I think over the past like 4 or 5 years, you've asked me a version of this question each time. And my gut instinct is to always think, yes, he should change it up for the Champions League.
Then he goes unchanged and plays his strongest team.
But he never has done in any of the previous years. So it just feels a bit of deja vu. I think he'll just play a very strong team again. I think he's more of the ilk where he views the Champions League group stages as incredibly important. And then on top of that, I think he also wants to get players in a rhythm, doesn't he?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the other side of this, Chris, is with that difficult run coming up in late November, early December time, probably want to qualify from the group as quickly as possible.
You always need that. Well, you would always prefer to have that qualification in place. It's just one less thing to worry about, isn't it? Get that ticked off. And then you can start perhaps chopping and changing with your selections in the later group stage games and free up players for the relatively more important clashes as they would be then. So I know it's imperative in Pep's mind from what I can kind of glean from his interviews that he just wants to smash it out of the park and then, you know, get his ducks in a row for what follows.
Yeah. The other side of this, KC, is with the opponent being who it is, in that it's a tough side. They keep winning the Swiss league, but at the same time, it's not a team that you would expect City to struggle that much with. Maybe gives you a chance to look at other options in a competitive game, in the sense of, you know, Foden can play through the centre with a little bit less of his defensive responsibility that he might need to have in the Premier League game, for instance.
Yeah, I'd agree with you there. And I'm avoiding saying that, you know, the young boys have grown up or anything like that. We should just absolutely, you know, batter him without having to come out of second gear, really, shouldn't we? Thinking back to the previous home game in the Champions League, obviously I know that we conceded, but the amount of chances that we missed in that first half, I can see the game going like that, but was just putting two or three of them away.
Yeah. And does it slow down in intensity if that happens? If City are 2-0, 3-0 up at half-time, does the second half just play out like a friendly?
Yeah, I would anticipate it. If we are 2 or 3-0 up at half-time, you would imagine that we'd just be pissing about with it on the halfway line for the majority of the second half. But as we've seen when we do tend to do that in the early rounds of the Champions League, we do seem to get another couple like towards the end of the game as well anyway, because we sort of lull the teams into a false sense of boredom, maybe, I suppose.
Yeah, sort of hypnotise them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to, no spoilers for the charity bet, but I kind of hope that we do get a few late goals in this game just for your one to come in, because any regular listeners will know what your options are already.
But no spoilers.
Yeah, no spoilers. Higgy, the other side of this is as well, we've seen a lot of Kovacic, Nunez over the last few games as City have tried to come up with an answer for not having Rodri there. Maybe this is an opportunity these couple of games to see what we might see, or to see what we could see from them in a more natural position for them.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, where would you be putting Kovacic in that more natural position compared to where he's been playing in Rodri's absence?
Probably slightly higher.
Slightly further up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's a ball carrier, isn't he, I guess. His form's really dipped, hasn't he, since he came back from the injury? I don't know if he's fully fit and he's been kind of nursing it through a bit in Rodri's absence or what, but perhaps it is the fact that he's been played a little bit more, a little further back than he would naturally be inclined to.
It doesn't really account for him just being absolutely mental with those challenges, though,
does it? Yeah, or not being able to play like 10-yard passes.
Yeah,
I don't know what's gone on there. Like you've already made one bad challenge. Just calm it down, mate. How he's not got sent off there, I don't know.
Yeah. What about Nunez though, Chris? Because we've not seen a huge deal of him, but what I have seen, I've been quite impressed with.
He looks tidy with a real glint of like class about him, doesn't he? Mm. I like what I've seen as well, and what you have seen makes you kind of hungry to see more. Unfortunately, the same can't be said of the unfortunate Calvin Phillips, who I've been backing and backing and backing to the hilt and saying that we've not been patient enough and he's been unfortunate with this and he's been unlucky with that, and I still think he has, but yeah, there's opportunities, you know, when they stack up, it's still up in grass.
It looks over for him, doesn't it, really?
It does. I find that, like, and I saw this for England as well last game, I only saw about the second half because I was busy, but he seems to try to prove himself too much in certain situations where he should just be playing an easy ball. Quite often someone will give him a pass where really you shouldn't be giving him the ball in that situation because he's being closed down or he's already marked, and it's like, you know, it's a bit of a hospital pass, or you're selling him, basically putting him into a bit of mischief with the pass. And rather than just toe poke it straight back, he'll think, no, I'm going to show you. And he'll try something a little bit more extravagant than perhaps he should. And yeah, once you get into that sort of, you know, you're trying too hard, it's very difficult, and it seems to be prolonged now over a sustained period.
You see players get in a rut, don't they, where it's like they're just digging themselves deeper.
Yeah, the psychological kind of barrier becomes entrenched, like you say, like a rut. And regrettably, I think unless something dramatic happens, you never know what's around the corner, do you? Because someone could get injured and he'll just be forced into a position and suddenly it starts clicking. He'll have one good moment, maybe a snapshot that goes in and the adrenaline pumps and he has a great game and it turns it, you know, anything could happen. But at the moment, it's looking like he's sort of got one foot out the door.
Yeah, I really hope it does happen for him because I don't think he's a bad player.
No, there's a player in there, isn't there? Definitely.
Yeah, yeah. What?
And he's such a nice lad. It may be too nice. Shave your head and start growling.
Going back to Nunes, though, what I would be interested to see is if he... Because like you said, Higgy, in terms of him being... he's looked like a tidy player and all that sort of stuff. What I'd be interested to see is if he can sort of chip in with goals and stuff like that. I think that would be interesting because I don't think I've ever... very limited games I've seen him for Wolves and stuff like that. Him carrying the ball and running with it has always been his strength, but it'd be interesting to see whether he is that type of player that can weigh in with, you know, goals from midfield.
It's funny you should say that. I was reading an interview with him and he was saying himself that he isn't really that kind of player and he prefers to pass the ball and to shoot, which I can kind of relate to in a way, and I don't mind seeing that, but you know, in this team, if you're in a decent position to shoot, then there's no reason to not have a pop.
I am
He's certainly deft enough with his feet.
I am sorry, Chris, but you have scored the goal the best goal that I've ever seen live, like in
what
in small sided football.
This is amazing, Greg.
Genuinely, I've never seen a goal better than what you've scored. We were playing at Power League in Stockport. It was
sitting down.
It was when we had a brief stint in the league there of the group of us, and the opposition had a shot, and like I just waved it wide because it was going wide. It hit the backboards, looped up into the air, and from about a third of the way into your own half, you just, because it had come off the boards, it, like the high ball rule didn't matter, so it was dropping down. You just turned and volleyed it as it was coming down from
Shades
your own
of
half.
Henry against Man United, I think.
Yeah, into the bottom corner.
Honestly,
yeah, it was an incredible finish. And I was like, I can kind of relate to someone who can't finish. I was like, mate, you whack it in from everywhere.
Yeah, no, I wasn't there for that game, but I've played with you, Higgy, before, and I've seen you lever some belters in.
Well, this is very flattering, and I'm blushing here under the earphones. But more often than not, they don't go in. And this isn't the point, anyway. I didn't say I can't finish. That's by the way, I didn't say that. But what I did say, that I prefer like a really crafty slide rule pass than say just scoring an average goal. I much prefer.
Yeah, great goals or no other. That's what you like, is it?
No, I'm a lynx man.
Speaking,
thanks of, for the. I mean, I should say thank you very much. I didn't come on here to get praise for my mercurial finishing ability, which there'll be plenty of people who do know me thinking that's bollocks.
Honestly, like genuinely, I was just stood in the area in that game, just like astounded at what I'd just seen, because I was like, why on earth would you take that shot on from there? But not only have you done it, you've popped it in the bottom corner at the same time.
This is my favourite show ever.
let's talk briefly about Haaland and Alvarez, KC, because their partnership has been growing this season, and it's certainly been bringing a lot out of Alvarez. Haaland's been a bit off form in the last few weeks, but obviously you don't back him to stay off form for too much longer. Are you expecting to see this season both of them starting more often together, or are we hitting the point of the season where we're starting to get a bit of rotation for Alvarez, do you think?
I think we will see more rotation than there has been. However, I do think that will be the default go-to for the rest of the season. And I think Pep is betting on us reaping rewards towards the back end of the season when they both click together at the same time.
Yeah.
Are we talking them starting together as a front pair or starting together on the pitch with Alvarez in a deeper position?
Just on the pitch, really, because Alvarez kind of plays, he sometimes plays as a partner, but quite often plays as just in behind, doesn't he?
Exactly, yeah. And he's kind of been trying to slot him into that De Bruyne role, hasn't he, with mixed results. Obviously, he's a different. Everyone's a different player than De Bruyne, but
I'd say everyone's a different player anyway to everyone else.
Hey, we're all different, guys. Embrace it. Yeah, true. Fair enough. Sorry.
Yeah. Let's get some predictions then for the charity bet. We're still on £175 raised so far this season. The winnings are going to the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. They'll be outside the Etihad again on Saturday before the game. Go down and see them with a donation if you can. William Hill is giving us 3 £10 correct score singles, and 2 games are up this week. We heard earlier on from Ryan that he's gone for a 2-2 draw between City and Brighton. That's 14-1 and £140 if he's right. Higgy, what are you having?
Manchester City 2, Brighton and Hove Albion 1.
Lovely. If that comes in, 8-1 and £80 if you're right. KC, we know it already, but tell us.
6-1, please.
6-1, just in case it happens. 6-1 is 60-1 and £600 if you're right. We'll stick with you for young boys because we already know where it's going. 6-1 again.
6-1, yeah.
6-1 again is another 60-1 and £600 if you're right there. So if that comes in twice this week, then we'll have made more money on the charity bet this season than any others previously. So fingers crossed for that. We heard Oliver said he's going for a 3-0 City win against Young Boys. That's 13-2 and £65 if he's right. Higgy, finish off. What are you having for Young Boys?
Well, I have slept since you asked me, but I think I said 3-1.
You did say 3-1. That's 10-1 and £100 if you are right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for more information on how to gamble responsibly, then take a look at begambleaware.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Ad-free episodes are available on Patreon. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Now then, when Joe Royal got City back into the Premier League in the year 2000, he set about trying to add reinforcements so that the team could stay there. In the end, they wouldn't be able to, but one piece of business he did do would go on to form part of Kevin Keegan's side that won promotion and earned a top half Premier League finish in the years that followed. I've been speaking to the ex-City defender Steve Howie to get his memories of that time at Main Road.
I mean, ultimately, it's about survival. But in all fairness, whilst I knew some of the players, I didn't know if the standard was going to be good. You only see bits and pieces that you have, that you do see, you know, on the TV. And obviously, Joe had brought in myself, Alfie, Inga Haaland, Lauren Sharvey and George Weir. And Paolo Wanchope was another one as well. So you're thinking, do you know what? We might be all right here. There's always, in the league, it's a brutal league, and you think, I think there's going to be teams worse than us. And I know that's a shocking thing to think of, but you think, well, we could be all right. And it was only when I've gone to the training ground and I'm looking at players and I'm thinking, wow, he's a good player. And then getting more confident. Obviously, the first game was a wake-up call because we got beat off Charlton 4-0. But after that, I think we won against Sunderland. I think Paolo scored 3. I think we beat Leeds as well. So it wasn't looking too bad. I just think in the end, because ultimately, I was actually doing something the other day when I was with Didi Hamann, and we were looking at the Liverpool game, and we were 2-2 with a couple of minutes to go, and we got beat 3-2. And I think there was a few games like that where we were just unfortunate, where just decisions didn't quite go our way. You can look at it that way, but I think ultimately, over a season, you are where you deserve to be, regardless if you've got good players or not. And I think that season, we just weren't good enough.
Yeah, I was looking up your record in that first season as well the other night, and I don't know if you know this, you scored 6 goals that season, which, like, for a centre half is quite a good return. But then I looked at your Newcastle record, and it was like you'd scored about 6 for Newcastle.
Well, I think what had happened in Newcastle was the fact that you know, we had players like, well, of course, Shearer and Ferdinand that were excellent in the box, whereas you know, we did have a threat with the lads at Man City, but I was normally at Newcastle the kind of decoy run, whereas when we had players like Kevin Horlock and Mark Kennedy who could put in a fantastic ball with a left foot, they would aim for me. I'd basically sort of say, listen, I'd be in this area, so put it in that area and I'll try and get amongst it. And ultimately, you know, their quality helped me score them goals, because if it wasn't for their fantastic balls in the box, I wouldn't be able to score them.
Yeah. Your goal at Old Trafford as well, I want to quickly ask you about that, because I don't know if you know this, that was only City's second Premier League goal at Old Trafford. That's how badly City have been doing in the years before that. Okay. And you got a 1-1 draw out of it as well.
Yeah, I mean, in all fairness, if I'm being brutally honest, we got absolutely battered that day. And I think they could have put us down if we'd getting beat. And it was Dicky, of all people, with a corner, and I just kind of seemed to miss everybody, managed to just stick my leg out and get that. As I said, I think they could have put us down, because obviously we were struggling that particular time. I think it was the week after we went to Ipswich, and I think we were winning 1-0, Sean Gord. I think we got beat 2-1. But obviously we didn't want them to get the bragging rights of sending us down. Yeah, they were the big stars. They were the big names. But somehow we managed to get a draw.
Yeah, and that game is also the infamous Roy Keane challenge on Alfie Haaland. Did you see it? Were you nearby?
I don't think you couldn't help but see it, to be quite honest. As I said, I think everybody knew it was coming. They knew there was history there of what happened, because obviously with Alfie and Roy with Man U and Leeds. I mean, my opinion was on this, and it's just my opinion. I think obviously Alfie, when he played for Leeds, was just trying to shepherd it out. I think Keane is trying to lash out. He's caught Alfie. He's obviously hurt his knee. I don't think Alfie is aware of how bad the injury is. That's when he goes down and obviously has a word with Roy Keane, because their matches are massively, you know, intensive as well. And I think, because of that, Roy's obviously thought, well, Roy certainly hadn't forgotten it. As I said, it was just a bad thing that happened, and for some reason went where it was the real animosity, certainly from Roy Keane's side. Just did not forget that. And as I said, I think for me personally, it wasn't a great challenge from him on Alfie. Kind of hurt himself, but Alfie didn't realise he was hurt. And of course, as I said, it spilled out. We pretty much knew in the tunnel at some stage something was going to happen. And of course, when Roy Keane made that challenge, he wasn't even waiting for the referee. He was just walking and taking the armband off.
Yeah. You mentioned Ipswich as well. There's obviously the knowledge that City are struggling that season, and you know, it's a real fight, and it's almost a case of the inevitable at various points in the season. It still doesn't mean that it's not painful when it's confirmed and the relegation actually happens. What was it like walking off the pitch at Portman Road, knowing that you were down?
Devastating. I hadn't been relegated before. I was at Newcastle when they'd been relegated, but I wasn't like a main player. I mean, I made my debut at 17 at Man United, but the team had already been relegated. I wasn't really a feature of the team until really Kevin came in. I mean, obviously Ozzy was the manager, but I was a bit part of player. I wasn't playing that much. I mean, obviously you still take responsibility because you're part of the squad. But being kind of one of the main players that have played a good few games for the team, you obviously take a lot of responsibility for it. And all lads did. And we just knew that we weren't good enough. But I think what we had to look upon it is, listen, it's a valuable experience. It's something we don't want to happen again to us personally, but also as a team, and certainly not like a club like Manchester City, because they deserved and the fans deserved to be, you know, up there playing in the best league. I mean, there's no given right for any team or any set of fans. But at the same time, the loyalty that they'd showed the club all the way through, getting to that point, obviously it was a huge setback, but it was one where we'd gone away. We talked about it, we reset and we come back, and it just went from strength to strength from there.
Yeah, and obviously you mentioned joining City and having kind of followed their rise back through the divisions. Ultimately, that relegation meant that Joe Royle lost his job. What did that mean for you? I mean, as a fairly new signing, is it quite hard having a manager lose his job pretty soon into your time there?
Well, yeah, of course, because he's the manager that's brought me in, and I'm part of the problem. But what I have to do is to make sure that I'm now going to be part of the solution. Whichever manager came in, I wasn't sure who it was. But yeah, I mean, it's not nice. I mean, obviously, in my playing career, I've seen some brilliant managers lose their jobs because of certain circumstances. The ones at Newcastle, it wasn't because we were getting relegated. It was just because of different circumstances. This one, obviously, the club wanted to go down a different route. I just happened to get a phone call. I was in San Francisco, and I got a phone call just sort of saying, Kevin's the manager. And I was like, right, okay. And obviously I had a fantastic time with him at Newcastle. Now I'm getting text messages off all the lads. What's he like? What's he like? What's he like? And I'm basically cutting pasting it, because I'm just thinking, I'm not wasted. I'm just telling the same thing. So I'm like replying. And in the end, my wife showed me how to cut and paste. So I was just sending the answers back to the lads, like, you know, he, this is what he's like. You know, so, and to be fair, pretty much turned out that way.
Yeah, I was going to say, what was he like as a defender playing in the Kevin Keegan team? Is it hard? Because he likes to attack, doesn't he?
He does. I mean, as I said, Kevin at Newcastle, it was a case of, you know, he defend. But at the same time, he had no problem. I mean, if I was playing with, like, say, Steve Watson or Rob Elliott or Warren Barton or John Beresford, they're the fullbacks, and I've got Philippe Barbet alongside me, I know for a fact I am going to be the only defender, because the rest of them will just leave and they'll bomb on. I would have maybe another one next to me if it was Darren Peacock, for instance. And I knew also that, as I said, he was one of these where it was a case of they've got hard-earned money here that they've come to watch you. Go and entertain them. Go and give them something to talk about and be happy about when they leave the ground, whether that's home or away. I mean, Kevin came in, he brought in Darren Huckabee. I mean, Hook's never had a good time under Kevin when he was at Newcastle. But we had, I mean, the team that we had, when you think about it, was absolutely fantastic. And I'd said to Dunny at one stage, whether Dunny remembers it or not, I can remember standing at Newcastle as a centre-half when we had the players that we had, and being in that ground and just thinking how lucky I am to be where I am. But I didn't really grasp it and take it in. Just kind of not took it for granted, but was just, well, this is the way it is. And it's not. Not in a million years is it the way it is. So there was one time I was stood next to Dunny and Main Road was absolutely packed, and we've got, you know, Wrighty doing his thing on one side, Hook's doing his thing. You've got, you know, whether it was Ali Benabia, Al Berkovich, Hooks, Kevin Horlock or Danny Teato, you know, you've got Jansen and you've got Dicky, Wongchok, Gorda, Anelka, all these kind of players. I mean, I've probably missed a couple of others, but just wonderful players to look at and just think, wow, the touch football, the movement. And at some stages, you just felt a little bit sorry for the teams that come to Main Road because they were just getting absolutely pumped.
Yeah. Did you know that was coming with when Kevin Keegan arrived? Did you know earlier than anybody else in that dressing room, maybe, that because you'd worked with him before, kind of what he was going to bring to the squad, what he could get out of the players that you had there?
I knew we would give it a good go. I knew with the way that Kevin was, the type of football would change. The personnel would change. And he would bring a different brand of football. But what Kevin is, and it's the same, it happens at every club, you know, like, you know, everybody does really well, but there comes to the point where now he's looking, all right, you've done fantastic for us, I'm going to get somebody better. You've done fantastic for us, I'm going to get somebody better in that position. And it's heartbreaking, really, because you're thinking, but that's just football, that's what happens.
Yeah. How did you end up moving on? What's the story behind you moving on from City?
I had a disagreement with the manager, which tends to happen. I think in hindsight, it was probably my fault, a little bit his, I have to say. But the fact, I think a big point was my fault. And again, it was just one of them things. So I was at more or less two clubs really throughout my career, and then I went to Leicester. Because I think Leicester were a team that was coming up as well and wanting to strengthen it. But Leicester, I'd looked at them, you know, that they had had a team which had been renowned for their centre-halves in likes of Gerry Taggart and Steve Walsh and Matt Elliott. But I've been speaking to Mickey Adams, he wanted to kind of go a different way. And I knew my time, I knew I wasn't going to get much game time at City. And I think at certain points, every point in your career, really, let's be honest, for a footballer, you want to play. And I just didn't think I'd get much game time because of the disagreement. And I just thought, well, you know, might as well go to Leicester. Might as well, you know, try it there. Again, a little thing, I was obviously settled at Manchester. My wife and my kids were settled where we lived. And I found it tough because I was having to really commute from Manchester to Leicester every day, there and back, which kind of took its toll, which didn't help me and that manager's situation. And that didn't last very long either again.
Yeah. Do you mind me asking what the disagreement was with Keegan? Was it around kind of appearances and playing time, that sort of thing?
We were playing away, and on the morning, I don't think it was a long journey. And he had asked me if I would go on the bench, and I said no. And he basically sort of said, I think you should rethink that. And I more or less said no. I'll be brutally honest, I wasn't using the words no. but you know, Arthur Cox, who was brilliant, Derek was actually amazing, you know, they were like, listen, you need to think about this. And I was like, no, I think I've been playing well. I deserve to play. To be fair to Kevin, he was like, I'm just trying to give you a rest. I'm just trying to look after the squad and stuff like that. But I wasn't one of them. I'm like, I'm fit. I'm playing well. I want to play. Because this rotation wasn't really happening then. and I've just been used to, if you're fit and you're the like number one at that particular time or number two, that's the settled back four. Well, that's the settled back four. That's it. You know, unless there's an injury, that's the way it is. I didn't take too well to it. And I think Gerrard came in, and I love Gerrard. I had nothing against Gerrard at all. I thought he was a fabulous player and a great lad. He came in, and I think Gerrard might have gotten injured. And because in the end, Kevin told me to go home and stay home. So I didn't even travel. And I was like, right, fine, okay, no problem. So as I said, it was kind of my fault and his fault. So I didn't travel. I was quite prepared to travel. But as I said, he asked me to go on the bench, and I said no. So Kevin's actually thinking, well, what's the point of you traveling if you're not going to go on the bench? And I think Gerrard got injured, and we didn't have a replacement. And the team got beat. And of course, that's, you know, I'm at fault for that as well. So when I came in on the Monday, I had to go and see him, and Kevin was furious, absolutely furious, which understandably so. We've spoke about it afterwards, you know, and we both were, it's the Brian Clough thing. It's like, you know, you can come to me at any time and we can discuss it, and we'll both agree that I was right in the first place. That was the Kevin Keegan thing. So yeah, I accepted it. I wasn't happy, but that's a decision sometimes you make at the heat of the moment.
You're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast. You've made it this far, so don't give up now.
That was former City defender Steve Howie speaking to me this week. If you'd like to hear the full interview, that's available now on our Patreon page. We talk more about the Kevin Keegan promotion season, playing with Ali Benarbia and Ayle Berkovic. Plus, there's more about his move to Main Road as well. Head over to patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast to sign up and give it a listen. It'll also be available in full for free at the end of the season on bluemoonpodcast.com. We're going to finish with a couple of quick listener questions. Get in touch on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast. You can also email through the website as well, bluemoonpodcast.com. Ollie Kilcoyne has been in touch on the emails to say, I was watching some old videos of Roberto Mancini's City the other day, and it got me thinking. Now that time has passed since his antics off the field, and given his impact at City and that he always seems to speak positively about his time here, should the club do more to honour Yaya Toure's achievements? Okay, so he does seem to be like the forgotten man of that early kind of City takeover era, doesn't he?
Who, Yaya Toure?
I mean, in terms of retrospective, kind of how he's viewed now. When you look at like the statues and stuff outside the Etihad, Silva, Company, Aguero, and like without Toure, none of it all happens.
Yeah, no, I think everyone, well, the majority of City fans that that are of age that watched Yaya from start to finish, I don't think anyone doubts him. From a fan perspective of just how monumentous he was. Like, he was an unbelievable player, and I'd argue probably the second or third best out of those four. But yeah, it's just not going to happen, is it? I think a line's sort of been drawn under it. Have they given him a pitch or something?
I think he's got a training pitch, yeah.
Yeah, he's got a pitch named after him, and I think
he's got a mosaic as well.
Yeah.
And it was underplanted with Begania, which is elephant's ears, and the common name, possibly a reference to the Ivory Coast. I think I mentioned that on the show before. Sorry, it's just Chris every now and then delves into horticulture, and I just love it.
Yeah, well, that's a common theme of this show, isn't it, actually, with the horticultural stuff.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, with
Brian Horticulture.
I had exactly that same thought. I don't know, I just didn't say it.
Oh my god.
Sorry, Casey. Yaya Toure.
Yeah, so Yaya Toure, yeah, he was good. No.
Great answer so far. I mean, I just googled monumentous, by the way. Is that a word?
I don't think it's a word, but I let it slip as well.
Fuck it. Right. So.
It could be. It could be a word.
It should be.
And then, yeah, it should be. And you could be the first citation of it.
Yeah,
like Colin's new word suggestion.
Bounce back ability or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So anyway, Yaya Toure. I think drawing a line under it. I think probably the second or third best player out of those four. But the thing is, like, with the statue thing, because of how good we are, where are we going to draw the line with statues?
Yeah, there'll just be hundreds of them outside the stadium, won't there?
Exactly. Like, you know, you think in 5 or 10 years' time, people are going to want one of, you know, Rodri, Stones, you know everyone.
Yeah, but just like the Terracotta Army, just outside the Etihad, yeah. Wasn't it?
Yeah, I think what probably would have made more sense is if they'd waited until all four had gone and did one of the four of them together. But
we could have like a waxworks museum, you know, and just have like a squad rotation basis in the museum, and the you know when it's an anniversary of something, Torre does wheel that one out. Just a thought.
Yeah,
Madame Tutores.
Oh, yeah.
Does that work? No,
not really. But well, I mean, we've said a lot worse on this show already. So I mean,
yeah. Well, it'd work if you had like Colo and Yaya on the advertising.
That was the intention. Yeah.
Hey, you're right about for yourself for Touré. Do you think City could do more to honour his achievements?
Well, I mean, I suppose that raises another question: like, how with what? Is it another statue, or I mean? Make it a bigger mosaic. Time might have passed, and he has done some amazing things for us. But you know, he did also kind of sully that with the help of his agent at the time. And it's
because I've been racking my brains here trying to think of what else he could do. Naming a bar after him would be offensive.
Yeah,
you couldn't name. I don't think. You could name a stand after him.
It's probably too much, isn't it?
Yeah. So I just don't know what else you can do really. Like I don't think what they've done is enough, but I don't see what else they could do that would be worthy enough.
Yeah.
And also, I kind of, without wishing to just be contrary,
get out of it. That's you all over.
No, it isn't. I just think that is he underrated?
No, that's what I mean. I don't think he's underrated by fans or anything like that. I think it's more the club done enough to recognise him, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, Ollie Kilcoyne didn't say he was underrated for the record, so I'm not saying that he did. But yeah, I don't know. I think we've done just about all that can be done, and to do something at this stage would be maybe a bit weird.
Yeah, I know this is not what Ollie asked, but there is another name in that question that maybe hasn't had the recognition he deserved, and that's Mancini. Casey, could you see a situation where bridges are repaired?
I can't see it, but yeah, I'd name the ground after him. Do you know what I mean? I absolutely love Mancini. I wouldn't name the ground after him. I was just exaggerating. But, yeah. I absolutely love Mancini, but I think, again, it'd be weird to do it now. I think, you know, with the time past and everything.
And certainly while Guardiola's achieving is happening.
Exactly, yeah. I think it'd be nice at some point maybe in the future if they did, you know, sort of reconcile issues and maybe became like a club ambassador in his older age or something like that. You know, that'd be nice to see. But other than that, I can't see what else they'd do.
Yeah. Steve O'Brien has been in touch on the emails as well to say, are these tiresome international breaks a part of why City tend to start more hesitantly than we become in the second half of the season when we're playing together week in, week out later into the campaigns? And Chris, I wondered if there was something in this, because you think of when City build up their momentum in a season, it is when there's no international breaks. It's when you've got a game every 3 days and it's kind of like that win or bust situation. And you look at where they are now at the moment, you don't have that same pressure on games, and every kind of 4 or 5 weeks or so there's a break where all the players go off to play for the national teams.
Why does that only apply to us?
That's a good question that I haven't thought about.
So to answer a question with a question, but everybody, I mean, at the top level, all the teams that we're competing against have a high percentage of internationals, so you know, international players, so the same should apply to them. Maybe we've got more, a higher level of international that get more game time and it impacts them more, I don't know. I mean, I personally don't really mind the international period that much, especially being English. If England are playing, you tend to get to be able to see quite a lot of our players anyway. Some of our players that you don't normally get to see.
I was going to say that, yeah.
So, and as a football fan, you know, if we didn't have the international breaks, you'd only have the City games. So it's basically more football with our players. So I don't necessarily personally find it that much of a...
I agree with that for nearly every international break. The only one that always pisses me off is the one that's literally straight after the season started.
Yeah, that is a bit of a ball buster. And then I think it's the frequency as well. The placement of them can be annoying. I don't disagree with them in principle and quite enjoy them. And if you, you know, it gives you time in the season to take a break yourself and get some, you know, other stuff done. But yeah, like I say, I don't not enjoy them. I tolerate them. I don't hate them.
I've no idea what you think of them.
We could just go down like the Richard Keys good football man response and just say they're all a bunch of softies these days and the paid loads, like they should be playing every day and all that crap.
Pay me £1 million a year, I'd play every day. Pay me £2 million a year, I'd play every 6 hours. Pay me £5 million a year and I'd play 24 hours a day every day of the year. That's how it goes with that one, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't. But, I wonder, Casey, if there's something more in it being that it's that the reason City are better in the second half of the season is that it's win or bust for most games, which it just isn't at the moment.
I think it's undoubtedly one of the factors, but I think it's also the case that the fact that it's win or bust for other teams, like we've seen with Arsenal, they just couldn't handle it last year. And then on top of that as well, I think it takes a while for players to get into the groove of a season as well, after a break. I know, like I mentioned earlier, we've had a good start in that. But you wouldn't say, we're operating at optimum levels or anywhere near it really at the moment, but we're still churning out results.
Yeah. I think one of the factors with us is that Pep does like a reboot, doesn't he? He likes a bit of a reinvention. So part of it might be just the team grappling with the way he's decided to reinvent the way that they play.
Reinvented the wheel again.
yeah. This one's a hexagon with little bells on it.
Yeah, right. And on that note, we're going to call it there. That's it for this week's Blue Moon Podcast. Thank you very much for listening. And thanks also to my guests for this one. KC?
We'll look at it in that, Mooney.
I'm going to give it a good go. It might take all day, but I'll give it a good go. And Chris Higginbottom?
Pleasure as always. Thanks for having me, and cheers for the massive big ups on the goal. Don't edit that out.
I might edit that out now, so that just sounds like you've been really weird at the end of the show, but we'll find out when you get to listen to it. Stay tuned for a clip of this week's Patreon show. I'll be back next week to preview the Manchester derby. See you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
It's interesting that you've both ranked the Real Madrid exit in 2022 in your top three. I'm wondering, Richard, if you've ranked it slightly higher for the guilt of having considered that City were already through. Because I know you already thought City were through.
Well, thanks for throwing that in there, because you've referenced this a few times since, and until you reference it, I managed to suppress it as a memory. I fully thought when Mahrez scored at the Bernabeu, I thought City were through. It's up there for me for pure disbelief. I think my comments in our WhatsApp were along the lines of, what is Pep already planning for the final? Can you imagine what he's going to do or what he's going to overthink?
Before their first goal, as the sort of build up to the goal, I was typing in Skyscanner on my phone, looking for flights to Paris. That's how much I'd sort of counted my chickens before they'd hatched. And I still feel terrible about that. I don't think it was my fault or anything, but I just think that was a moment of hubris that I will always remember, when I think that a game's won before it actually is.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast and join us again next time for another episode.
Brand. brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.